Hello everyone, and welcome to this, the latest podcast from the Institute of Leadership and Management. In this ongoing series of weekly podcasts, we review topical news stories with a leadership and management theme. This week's podcast covers the period up to the 16th of April 2020. My name's Nick Scott. I am an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and joining me today to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Leadership author Julie Winkle-Giulioni, writing on website SmartBrief, notes that a large portion of the population is still figuring out how to work at home under these distracting conditions. Despite coping with heightened anxiety and grappling with new technologies such as video conferencing, Giulioni sees this as an unprecedented period, a block of time that we're unlikely to have again, and argues that we have choices. Well, we can just muddle through, or we can use it to better ourselves, deepen our capacity, and position ourselves for greater contribution. She argues that you should find the time, focus, and resources to make personal development happen, and her suggestions include, for example, replacing the time spent commuting with time spent learning to help create a learning routine, curating a learning playlist of interesting resources, podcasts, webinars, articles and the like, so that when you have some slack time or need to recharge, you have something valuable to hand to tap into. So Kate, how important is it to spend time on our learning and growth while we're still getting used to working from home?
If you read first-person accounts from people in Italy and Wuhan who have come out almost the other end of us with all the great intentions they had to really engage with learning, and then weeks on reporting that they haven't achieved those sort of lofty ambitions. The lesson for me from that is, yes, this is a great opportunity to learn. We have more time that we did use travelling, that we can do interesting things, watch interesting videos, listen to great podcasts. But we also have to be really kind to ourselves as well and not feel that we're not succeeding or we're wasting time because we're not doing all of these things, because we are, for many of us, in survival mode and just keeping on, keeping on. Takes a huge amount of energy. And so, yes, learn, but only when it's inspiring you, only when it's enjoyable, not because you think it's another thing you have to do.
Our second story notes that a recent Gartner survey of chief financial officers found that post-COVID-19, the majority plan to increase the number of remote workers in permanent positions. Vice President of the Gartner Finance Practice, Alexander Bandt, reflecting on the lasting impact the coronavirus will have on the way companies do business, noted that almost three quarters plan to shift at least 5% of previously on-site employees into permanent remote positions, with around one quarter of respondents aiming to designate as many as 20% of their workers as home workers, at least in part to realise the cost savings and benefits available through using a remote workforce. So should this research be seen as a cynical attempt by organisations to cut costs, or a welcome acknowledgement of the values of home working?
As the Institute, we've been campaigning for many years for a more flexible approach to managing one's working life, and part of that, of course, being able to work from home. What has happened recently is that organisations that were resisting that demand, really, that's been led by employees for more flexible working to be able to work from home more, being forced into that situation, and they're now immediately seeing the benefits. And one of the immediate benefits for people working from home is that they don't need an expensive office space. And that's from an organisational level. From a personal level, of course, there's the cost saving of travel expenses that you're no longer incurring. So it's not cynical to actually be realistic about what value we get from our office space. We're already seeing that we were travelling probably far too much, having far too many unnecessary face-to-face meetings. So people who want flexible working are going to be pleased at this development, and chief financial officers obviously going to take advantage of the new skills that their workforce have developed in remote working.
Well, taking a slightly different tack on the same idea, US policy think tank the Brookings Institution blogged that the requirement to work from home for public health reasons may have broken through the inertia around traditional work cultures. They note that previous crises have galvanised remote working, New Yorkers being drawn to it post 9/11, and the take-up in New Zealand was much higher following the 2011 Christchurch earthquake. They also note that as people learn how to use remote technology and adopt their day-to-day behaviour, some will find it's a better fit than on-site working. So, Kate, are we looking at a potential silver lining? For example, improved job satisfaction, better work-life balance, reduced carbon emissions, and so forth. Could there be an upside to this period?
When you're talking about working differently and flexibly, the thing to always remember is to be flexible. So there isn't a single response, a single solution. We are social creatures. We like to connect. We like to get together to talk about problems. And we also know that ideas that are shared are improved and modified and become far more accepted than a single person presenting a sort of fait accompli. What I think is really interesting about this new way of working is the speed with which people have learned to do it, the humour, the amusing mistakes that have been made that have kept many of us entertained, either through making them or watching other people make them. But what to me is the really standout difference is how it's brought managers into the homes of individuals in a way they never did before. You have no choice but to take account of people's domestic circumstances, when they can work, when they can access a computer, when the bandwidth isn't being used up by one partner or another, or school children doing their lessons. All of those aspects of people's life that we normally refer to as work-life balance are being brought home. And I hope that this will lead to a much more compassionate and understanding style of management that actually is based on the needs of the individual person that you're managing, not a policy, protocol or procedure that's designed with no one individual in mind and is intended to somehow meet the needs of everybody. So let us continue to be flexible and let us continue to be mindful and responsive to the individual circumstances that people find themselves in now, and of course have always had different circumstances.
Well, our final story this week looks at how the CEO of teleconferencing platform Zoom responded to recent bad press about the company. With Zoom making its normally pay-per-use platform available free to many during the pandemic, we commented recently on the good press that this has generated. However, New York Times chief consumer technology writer Brian Chen commented on some less favourable news. He notes that Zoom's decision to make its app available directly from its own website, as opposed to via Apple's App Store or Google Play, meant that its security architecture was weaker than that of applications released through those channels. Following problems with hackers gaining access to users' webcams and incidents of so-called Zoom bombing, where trolls crash other people's meetings and bombard them with frankly inappropriate content, Zoom founder Eric Yuan was forced to publicly apologize and acknowledge the platform's flaws. He announced that Zoom was responding with a 90-day plan to address the security concerns. And this would involve input from third-party experts drawn from elsewhere in the knowledge and tech industries, including social media, the banking and finance sector, and informed specialists drawn from the academic community. Kate, what does this story tell us about Yuan's desire to learn from Zoom's mistakes, and what can other leaders take away from his response?
You're right, we did commend Zoom for being so generous and so immediately responsive to the needs of the home worker. And I think that was a right assessment. And I think by owning this problem immediately, by saying what they're going to do to fix it, by recognising that they can't fix it on their own and they need other people to help them to put it right, by apologising, they've done everything right. We will make mistakes. It's an unprecedented shift in how we work and things will go wrong. But from a PR point of view, I think he's done everything exactly right. There's been no delay in taking responsibility. There's been a very genuine apology and there's been an absolute intention to put it right. So it's well done, Zoom.
Well, thanks very much for that, Kate. That's all we have time for this week. Listeners can find further current and historical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website at www.instituteLM.com. And of course, we will be back with more topical news items next week. So please subscribe to this podcast series through iTunes or Spotify. Bye for now.